Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Baseball. Welcome to Continued Success. This is Justin Clue of Baseball Prospectus and Fan Graphs. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports.
I held back the laugh as long as I could.
Liz, did you want to do the intro or was I supposed to do that?
Okay. No, that was excellent.
Terrific. Hey, hey, Liz.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, some stuff happened this week. We've pretty much already gotten our feelings out about some of it. We can retread a little bit of that. But for that reason, because people have access to a beautiful new episode of Hidden Season and a entertaining new episode of whatever Chris Jones and I do on the Hidden Season Patreon, available for $5 a month, I feel like we're probably going to keep this conversation a little more compact than we typically do. But I think people will just have to live with that, and that's fine. So...
I have not talked about it.
That's true.
I've talked about it with John, and you've talked about it with Chris. But, I mean, this pairing has yet to talk about it.
Are you saying that it's different to have a conversation with John Stolness than it is with me?
It is, in fact. I have empirical evidence.
I find that impossible to believe. And we have our first topic.
There we go.
Justin and John, differences therein. Gaps in knowledge thereof.
Justin and John, different people, ?
I almost just called him Joel Johnness, just for the record. So
I'm going to get him a company shirt, Hidden Season Corp shirt with, what was it again?
Joel Johnness.
I'm absolutely going to do that. I'm not going to do that. But
been working with this man for... 5 years.
Long time. Though I do kind of want Hidden Season Corp shirts now.
Yeah.
Hidden Season Corp, we could come up with like a cool, like corporate-esque baseball logo.
And then get sued by Charlie Manuel's Twitter account. Yes.
He didn't trademark Hidden Season.
You're right. Yeah. I feel like we, you know what? I better not get into this because it seems like a legal territory and we're actually literally recording ourselves having a conversation about it. So let's just back away slowly as we always do when things get rough around here and circle on back to the topic at hand, which is, I don't know, which one of these do you want to do first? Cole Hamels abandoning the Phillies forever. And scorning them and putting on a clothing with the Braves logo on it and being like cool about it. Or Zach Wheeler scorning, who did he scorn? The White Sox for more money. We didn't talk about this. Chris and I talked about this, we didn't talk about Zach Wheeler taking less money to come to Philadelphia, which is obviously, you know, because his wife's family's from New Jersey and not because of any I love Philadelphia reasons. But we can probably twist it into that if we want to. And we also didn't talk about the fact that, and I know you and John did, that the Phillies offered Cole Hamels $9 million, which is half of what he got.
Well, this is obviously what we're talking about first. I mean, come on.
Do you think the Phillies really wanted Cole Hamels?
No. You don't even have to finish that sentence. They didn't. I mean, I'm not surprised that Matt Klentak doesn't want him and has no desire to bring him back despite the fact that Hamels wanted it and the fans wanted it. I am not surprised because I don't think he really... I mean, his job isn't to care about Philly's history. His job is to, theoretically, build a winning team. Mm. I still think that Hamels if they had just offered him 15, if they'd offered him what every other team was offering him, he would have done it.
Right?
I think he would have done it. I think he really would have because he picked the largest contract, but he also has no connection to Atlanta.
Right. I mean, right. And he said on the record, he was like, oh, yeah, I would come back, definitely. And it just seems like, I mean, that's what Chris and I discussed, that it felt like they had already done it. Because it felt like oh, yeah, that's that narratively, that makes perfect sense. That, the old, it comes back and that, you know, we all get to feel a little nostalgia while once again we try this. It's a new era of Philly's success thing again for the third straight year. Yeah, it just made perfect sense. No one really... No one really looked at it much more closely than that, I think. I mean, there's probably a column out there that exists that says, like, oh, Cole Hamels is a pretty good fit for the Phillies, blah, blah, blah. You know, there was a reason we all considered it closer to reality than it ever actually was. But yeah, I think we had all just sort of accepted that that was good. It was, you know, but we were looking at it as fans. And Matt Klintak isn't looking at it like, oh, Cole Hamels, World Series champion. Friend of the franchise, absolutely. He's looking at it like, is this asset the correct asset for my for my baseball? I'm sorry, that's cruel.
It's not. This man denied us our chance for a reunion, a late career and probably final reunion with Cole Hamels, baseball player. You can do whatever voice you want for him.
I hadn't thought about it that, yeah, he probably was never super into the idea. And do you think he had to get talked into or have it explained to him that he had to offer Cole Hamels something just to make it like, well, the Phillies have to, we got to be in this conversation, even if it's just for a second with a lousy $9 million.
I mean, they offered him whatever they wanted to. I mean, I don't think it was grounded in reality. They obviously had no intention of getting him. I think you're right. I think they just made him an offer based on what they thought they, who knows? I don't even know where that $9 million number came from because it's far less than he's worth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 1-year deal. And next you can give him a qualifying offer for the same, like if Hamels is within half a run or even just a full run of where he was last year and his ERA, his strikeouts, if he stays healthy at 36, he's going to completely be worth his contract and be worth a qualifying offer the following year. It's like, and after that, he could just retire if he wanted. He could be like, goodbye, fans who have loved me for a long, long time, and the new fans, you know, that I've now gotten to know. Like, Matt Klintak has denied us this moment, and that's really what I'm mostly upset about.
And that's fair because, it just, again, it seemed so natural. The Phillies need starting pitching. We want to see Cole Hamels. Cole Hamels is available. He wanted to come here. And he's just, I think the worst part of it is that he's going to the Braves. I think that's, you know, it's not that he's not coming here. It's that he's going there.
It's the worst of any outcome. Like him going to the Astros would be terrible. I would hate that. But at least I don't have a visceral reaction to seeing him in an Astros uniform as I do to seeing him in a Braves uniform.
Mm-hmm. Remember when Ryan Howard was in a Braves uniform?
Oh, that was gross. Remember when Jimmy Rollins was in a Giants uniform for a while?
Oh, yeah.
Well, all of our most favorite treasured stars went on to betray us.
It happens to the best of them, you know, quite literally it does. Because, you know, at the end of the day, they want to get paid and they want to keep playing. And Cole Hamels is 16-10 career I'm reading the wrong statistic. My bad. No, he's actually, I was going to just naturally seg into talking about Cole Hamels' statistics at the Braves Stadium, but then I was accidentally reading his statistics against the Braves, which factor into this not at all. But in 21 starts at Turner Field, Cole Hamels has a 2.95 ERA in his career. So, you know, he's probably thinking, he's probably not thinking too much about that because he's thinking, I'm trying to pitch well whatever stadium I go to. And he's also pitched in there a bunch of times because he played for the Phillies for so long. But yeah, he's got an ERA under 3 at Turner Field, which isn't the Braves Stadium anymore anyway.
I was going to say,
SunTrust Park, he has one start. And, you know, he only allowed six runs.
Yeah.
Maybe I just shouldn't be a stats guy. This is the problem. I should not be the one rattling off statistics. Apparently, even in their most basic form, I cannot even wrap my head around it and relate them to you, the listener, correctly. So let's just back away slowly from this whole mess.
I do have one comment on that.
Please,
at
of course.
My old friend, baseball fantasy guy, Al Melchior, I believe is with The Athletic now, but I'm not entirely, I don't know that for 100%, but he was tweeting some park factor stuff for Hamels when he was traded a few days ago and said that SunTrust Park's atmosphere, the air is thinner than it was at Turner Field, and it's more similar to the Rangers Stadium. Now, Cole Hamels, if you look at his raw numbers for, you know, just overall for his time with the Rangers, you see some kind of high but relatively steady numbers. If you go drill down and look at his home and away numbers,
interesting.
It's pretty different. He never really pitched well at Globe Life. I think that's what it was. They're about to, they have left Globe Life Park, which is so sad because it's gorgeous. But Hamels never pitched well there. I think in his first full year with the Rangers, he had an ERA over 4 at Globe Life and an ERA under 3 everywhere else. There's something about the atmosphere of that stadium that just didn't do it for him. And Al saying that the atmosphere of SunTrust Park is similar, I really hate it, gives me faith that he might not completely dominate the Phillies next year.
All right.
Though
yay.
we will get a Bryce Harper Cole Hamels rematch.
Oh yay. Ish, I guess. Yeah, I mean,
no, like they'll be pitching against each other. I don't know.
No, I mean, yay-ish.
Well, yay-ish. I mean, it'll be. I'm really curious of what's gonna happen when a Hamels comes back to, because he came back, I think, last year for the first time.
Yeah, somebody was talking about how Andrew Knapp faced some of the more irrational hatred among Phillies fans that they'd ever seen, and the counter arguments to that popped up were Bobby Abreu, Ryan Howard, even Jimmy Rollins got some irrational hate there for a lot. There was actual reasons for it. Those
Andrew
reasons
were
flawed. Yeah. But Cole Hamels also popped into my head as somebody who received a lot of irrational hatred.
He did.
From
yeah,
fans.
That's true.
And he's the kind of guy that obviously will be appreciated forever for obvious reasons. But making, like, you know, quote unquote, making a decision like that when people aren't, you know, people don't take a whole context of an argument or a situation in mind when they're about to boo someone in the stadium, which, you know, nor should they. It should be, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm just saying, if we're talking about the reaction he gets, I don't think people have never needed much of a reason to boo Cole Hamels, because he kind of lives on that fence ever since the remark on the radio during the 2009 World Series that we talked about earlier on this podcast in the offseason. I think people, you know, he's not an automatic yay. Like if Chase Utley walks in the stadium, the place breaks into applause. Cole Hamels, it's like, well, what has he done lately? What's the latest on Cole Hamels that we will react to? And since it's signing with the Braves, I think there will be a playful ish booing, but I think it'll definitely be booing.
I'm really curious because I love Cole Hamels so much. But even I don't know what I'd do, because seeing him in a Braves uniform is, it's visceral. Like, yeah. I don't blame him for doing it. He picked the, he picked the largest contract, and the Phillies didn't offer him shit. And, you know, this is how the business works. But man, does it suck so bad to have
it
to
does.
Watch him do this. Like, now I have to root for him to fail for 19 games a year, you know, or however many he'll probably end up starting. I mean, you never know, but like probably 3 times or so for the, you know, for the Braves against the Phillies.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't want to do that. I don't want him to suck. Mm-hmm. But yet I do, because it's the Braves. And I think the Braves should always be terrible. They should always fail, and embarrassingly.
Right. And it's, you know, you probably, actually, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it. People will take into account the fact that the Phillies shortchanged him and let him go. So actually, I don't think he will be held responsible for signing with the Braves. I think this situation is simple enough that people will factor that into their mouth noises at the stadium. So I'm going to reverse what I said. I think he gets a nice reception, and I think people can grasp the concept that the Phillies didn't want him enough to give him the money he deserved.
Yeah.
Or even the money like he would have taken, like we said, probably less to come here. Not much less, but, you know, It was worth something to him to be in Philadelphia, and Phillies couldn't even give him that.
No.
So, well, you know, this is one of several free agent signings so far in baseball this year. Liz, it's been a little more entertaining, I think, of a free agency season this year.
Yes.
Right off the bat, you know, and maybe it'll turn into bullshit, but, you know, right off the bat here, it seems like it's been a little more fun. It's been reminding me of back when it was like this it was a little more common that it was like this. And obviously the Phillies made what has been called the biggest move of the offseason thus far. It won't wind up being the biggest move of the offseason, obviously, but this far in, it is the most headline grabbing news. So I guess we can let's just talk about that. Liz, Zach Wheeler.
Yes.
Hello.
I have spent several days trying to make myself like this more, and I'm still not there. I mean, he's going to have to convince me on the mound, or probably, you know, when he does something cute in spring training, I'll be like, oh, I love him. Look at that.
Or they send him to a Sixers game or something.
Yeah. Like, oh, yay! Look at him. He loves it here already. Yeah. Like, yeah. That's all it takes. We're easy.
I sound like I'm being condescending, but I will be part of that group. Being like, ah! Zach Wheeler, yay!
Exactly. So, you know, I'll say that I'll probably get on board at some point, but I'm still, you know, my ambivalence isn't about the Wheeler signing, because I think, you know, with other moves, it's definitely going to be fine. But this is the only move they have now on the books. And there's also, you know, the reported mandate that they have to stay under the luxury tax threshold. And so this is the only move they've made, and the fact that you can see a roadmap where this is the biggest signing of their offseason, that's what I'm really frustrated about. Someone accused me yesterday of, on the Wednesday podcast or whenever it was, the one that I did with John Arrow this week, of calling for Matt Klentak to be fired. I think you can go back and hear I did not do that. I did not say he should be fired. I'm not an idiot. But I did say I wanted to start a pool for when he might be fired, if this is indeed his biggest move of the offseason. So those are different things. They're different.
I mean, the Phillies need starting pitching. They signed a starting pitcher.
Yay.
He is called the third best starting pitcher available. There's a bunch of really broad ways you can go in this. One is, like, why wouldn't they pay for one of the best talents on the market that are available? Why do they have a mandate to stay under the luxury cap? Why does signing Zach Wheeler have to be the biggest thing they do this offseason? But, you know, Zach Wheeler is a solid pitcher. Zach Wheeler does improve the rotation. There's a chance that without the garbled messages from management and pitching coaches, that pitchers like Aaron Nola and Zach Eflin are more effective. So maybe that's where some of the wins come from that you need to get from your rotation in 2020. I think the bottom line here is that I'm not, like, excited about the Zach Wheeler signing. I'm not disgusted by it, but it's not every signing excites you. This was just an opportunity we're still riding that. Hey, the Phillies have all this money and they're in talks with, like, the biggest free agent. And this was something you and I talked about, that coming off last year, there is perhaps an idea being discussed between you and I that,
that the highest, most official level,
that the Phillies signed Bryce Harper. They signed the biggest free agent, you know, on the planet last year, and they signed him. And that still is kind of, like, startling to me.
Yeah.
But there's a chance that, you know, what if they're thinking is, look, we signed him, we spent all this money on him, what more do you people want? Like, you we're not the Yankees in the 90s, where the bad guys of baseball were accused of doing things like paying money to good players and then having them on their team. Back when that was the cute age of baseball we lived in.
How dare you?
They made one big Yankees-esque signing, and now it's sort of like, okay, but seriously, where did all that money go? We got to hang out back here for a second and just sign the Zach Wheelers of the world and stay out of the Garrett Cole conversations. But I don't know. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, this is what has happened, and Zach Wheeler is here, and I'm not unhappy about it, but this is also a guy who lost 2 years because of a UCL tear. In 2015 and 2016, didn't pitch at all. Came back, did not look good in 2017. And then the past two seasons has put together a couple of solid years from that Mets rotation that was going to be so formidable. He's one of the survivors of that, but there's obviously other better names that were a part of that. So he's not Jacob deGrom. He's not Noah Syndergaard. He's not even early stage Matt Harvey when he was a really dominant pitcher. He's just kind of like one of the average-ish arms from that rotation of more threatening arms. He used to have a really good slider. I don't know. Is he still known for that? When he came up as a prospect, he was like, oh, it's just great. Zach Wheeler is a Mets prospect, high 90s fastball, great slider, developed a changeup. And it doesn't take much to improve on the Phillies rotation right now, frankly. So They're going to do something else. They're going to scoop some cheap little guy off the free agency market at some point. But
value at the margins.
If this is as exciting as things get this offseason, I would guess my conclusion is I was hoping to be a little more excited.
Yeah. I mean, Zach Wheeler's fine. He's just not exciting. And it's not that we're chasing excitement. We're not chasing the next high of big free agent signing.
I'm doing that.
You know, this isn't, you know, we're not trying to stick a needle in our arms here, but the reason people get excited is because a guy is good, because he warrants that kind of excitement. And that's not what Zach Wheeler really inspires. So, like, they've improved their rotation, and if Aaron Nola gets back to form, they have two great pitchers, and possibly three if you include Zach Eflin. But the rest of it's a mystery because it doesn't really matter what Jake Arrieta says. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm back to being myself. I can't wait to do what I always did. Show me.
Shut up. Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little more about what the Phillies have done, what they will do, and this disaster we call life when we come back from this break. Well, I just want to say, Liz, yeah, the Phillies signing Zach Wheeler. Why does it always have to be? I think this is one of the frustrating points that people get stuck on. And before we move on to our next topic, I did just want to say, why does it always have to be at this point that the Phillies could be good if? Is like always how we have to say it. It's not like, oh, this guy will be this, this guy will be this, this will be this, and this will be this, and the Phillies will be a contending team this year. You know, like Freddie Freeman is this, Ronald Acuna is this, Ozzy Albies is this, this young rotation will do this, and we acquired Cole Hamels. You know, some teams get to say that. Other teams like the Phillies have to say, well, if this works the way it's supposed to, and if we hammer that screw back in, and those sparks stop coming out, and the exhaust stops filling the room when we turn the thing on, everything will work exactly the way it's supposed to. And I think we got to see, we're just at the point where we got to see this machine work the way it's supposed to without as much tinkering. And we'll have a little more confidence in the Phillies getting, you know, talent that isn't the biggest talent on the market and working with it to become more than it has been before. Because I think that's the idea with Zach Wheeler is like, you know, yeah, it'd be great to acquire a solid pitcher and improve the middle of the Phillies rotation. But it'd be great if Zach Wheeler looked like the Zach Wheeler that he, you know, was threatening to be at points earlier in his career. And the Phillies probably think maybe we can scare that guy out of him.
I said this to John. Why can't we just get guys who are done developing?
Exactly.
Like, why can't we get guys who have spent enough time in the oven, you know, who are exactly what they are and who have hit their ceiling and are there, you know, or who are close to it? Like, you're not going to find a Juan Soto out there, but there is kind of a really good guy who is who is at his peak. And that's like Steven Strasburg and Gerrit Cole. Like, the reason why the Phillies jumped on Harper is because they thought that he could help them. He wanted to be there for a long time. You know, he was worth the money. And good pitching is what wins championships. Good pitching is what does it. And you need hitters too, but they have some hitters. You know, they don't have all of them. Why can't we just get guys who are done? Why can't we just get guys who are the best at what they do? Why is that so much to ask? John Middleton is worth $3.3 billion, and the Phillies reportedly bring in over close to $300 million in revenue every year.
Yeah. It's just like this idea of paying for the past versus paying for the future. And I think that's what the Phillies in this case, and in a lot of cases, think they're doing. They're like, well, if we can pay for the years when this guy is good, then it's going to look like on the offset we're signing a bunch of guys who aren't that good, but we will make them good. And I just don't know what the evidence of that is, that they're capable of that. Before, I think it was just that cocksuredness that they were just like, look at this system. Look at these algorithms. We got this. We're gonna make bad players good. We're going to squeeze all this value out. And that didn't really work. It's not that it can't work or that on its, you know, on its own, it's a bad idea. It can happen. Other teams have done well thinking like that. Like, our system can improve guys. You know, Chris and I talked about how the Pirates had that reputation of being that team where, like, pitchers would go in, they wouldn't have the best numbers, but they'd come out looking pretty good and get a deal, you know, elsewhere, because the Pirates won't pay to keep talent. But, you know, that's just something, that's not something the Phillies have been yet, and maybe they will be. Maybe those days are ahead of us, and maybe this is a team that will be not only playing at peak performance, but also getting its most efficient performances and talent from players moving forward. Hooray! I don't think there's going to be a labor stoppage at all. Moving on, the NL East. We've obviously talked a lot about the Phillies. We've talked a little about the Braves, but there's other teams in this division, and they've also been doing things. And Liz, the New York Mets are undergoing an ownership change. What is this? Now, I have a very vague understanding of this, so I'll try to lay it out for people. A deranged billionaire art collector has accidentally purchased the Mets, and because of that, a PG-rated Disney movie from the early 90s is about to happen involving the Mets. Like, I think it's called... what a Mets or something with like something with an exclamation point in the title. But maybe you can give people a clearer idea of what exactly is going on.
So the Wilpons have been the majority owners for a number of years and have been slowly selling pieces of the Mets to minority owners. I'm going to guess because they just are terrible with money and lose it all the time. They're the ones who were involved in the Bernie Madoff hedge fund pyramid scheme lost a lot of money. And almost, I think if they hadn't been such close friends with Bud Selig, they would have been contracted, because it's an embarrassing thing to happen. But they've gotten to the point where now they're just going to sell. I think he's increasing his investment enough that he's not the majority owner yet. He's not the controlling owner yet, but he could easily become that. And him buying into the Mets has necessitated an agreement. Like, he has enough control now, I believe, that he can influence, like, major decisions. And part of the decision he's made, as you know, when he's buying in, is keeping the Wilpons in control for the next 5 years. So there have been a lot of Mets fans who are very happy to see the Wilpons go. And they should be, because they suck. They're terrible at what they do, really, in every conceivable way. It doesn't matter. Pick a business that they've been involved in. They are bad at it. And that's also the business of just managing people and not discriminating against pregnant women, allegedly, quote unquote. But... the thing that some Mets fans seem to be missing is that this dude, despite being, you know, worth theoretically like $9 billion, is still keeping the Wilpons, like, in their jobs. The Wilpons right. have done nothing but spend little and make bad deals. And so the optimism, I think people are feeling that way, and they should, because Mets fans, I feel bad for them because they deserve competent ownership. But I think their excitement is a little unwarranted, because there's still 5 years of Wilpons left to go. And after that, like, what do you think that this hedge fund ghoul,
it's going to fix things?
You think he's going to actually, like, he's going to pump in a bunch of cash into this team?
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Yeah.
That's not why you buy a baseball team. You buy a baseball team to do what the Marlins did and what the Royals are about to do. Because ownership has changed there in the last couple of years. And the Marlins immediately got rid of everyone and are just pulling in pure profit now.
I'm realizing that I don't 100% know how to pronounce his name. And rather than embarrass myself further than I already have, I'm going to ask you, Jay, writer for the Hall about the Hall of Fame, senior writer for Fangraphs.
Jaffe.
That's what I thought. That is what I thought. But I was like, if this is wrong, it's going to be ridiculous. But Jay Jaffe said yesterday about this situation, having been a Dodgers fan earlier in his life, which also kind of cracked me up, insinuating that he like had renounced fandom at some point. But he said if he learned anything rooting for News Corp to sell the Dodgers, It's that the, you know, billionaire who comes along to buy them is not really an answer to the problems, as Frank McCourt was in this situation where the Dodgers were bought by a billionaire who created plenty of his own problems, as we all know, in Los Angeles.
He was then forced to give up ownership of the team and sold it to another group. And that group has been, you know, not bad at all. They've pumped a lot of money into the team, but it's not an instant answer. You know, ownership changing in a team, like, again, you don't buy a baseball team to spend money. You buy a baseball team to bring in the profits. And this guy isn't even buying a baseball team. He's giving the Mets money to gain more ownership, so he'll get a larger percentage of the you know, the profits for himself. But it's unclear how much control that gives him, whether that means he has the ability to, you know, or the desire, even if he had the ability, to pump more cash into the organization. You know, the Wilpons are still in charge and they control the purse strings, even with someone else owning it. Like, maybe in 5 years, when Fred Wilpon is perhaps dead and Jeff is sent off on a boat somewhere without a compass.
The island where they sent Chris Jones. they can be roommates on that.
Exactly.
Single pile of sand with one palm tree on it.
Like, maybe in 5 years, something will change. Maybe in 5 years, it'll be different. But until then, there's no reason to be excited because nothing's changing. Literally nothing is changing. Everything is going to look the same.
That's a good Mets equivalent for, well, there's always next year. It's like, maybe in 5 years, things will be different. That's a... not great. And would you say it's fair that the idea of billionaires is cracking me up.
They shouldn't exist, really.
the idea when a billionaire comes along, I guess because I'm imagining a guy with like suspenders and a top hat and a monocle just walking down the streets.
Monopoly guy, is that it?
I guess I am, because he just finds the Mets like in the way you find a quarter on the sidewalk. And he's like, what's this? I'm on my way to acquire more art pieces for millions of dollars. What is this? I'll just take this, I guess. This will be mine now. And like, that's kind of what we're looking at. Is it fair to characterize this as when a billionaire buys a baseball team, he's not buying something to make it better, he's buying something because that's what to him what a toy is at this point.
That's what it is. Like, these every owner decides what they want to do with their toy because that's what it is. None of these guys make their living or their primary income off of this team. Mm-hmm. And they take profits from it, but kind of why they want it to be more profitable. They all want to get as much out of it as they can for what they're putting in, which is the point of capitalism. So, sigh. Capitalism is evil. Anyway. That's all I have to say about that, because it's billionaires playing with these teams. Like, remember when the Rays floated the idea of doing their split season in Montreal?
That idea is dead.
I
asked about that on one of
these podcasts.
It is dead
for now. I wrote the story and Ray's PR reached out to say, oh, no, it's not dead. It's just dead for now. After 2020, in 2028, we'd consider it again, because that's when their agreement with the city of Tampa the St. Petersburg is up. Their stadium lease agreement runs out then. So as of now, no one knows what's going to happen to the Rays after 2027. And they're like, but we'll totally consider that split season idea again after our stadium lease is up. And I'm like, and what happens? Like, you can't do a split season with Montreal when you literally have nowhere to play.
That idea was bizarre to begin with.
I mean, because part of my idea was, what a neat idea for a billionaire to have. Let's spend half our season here. And then to get more profits, let's have a whole separate stadium in Montreal where there are more fans. But we also need to have another entire staff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, how does none of this works? And I'm like, this is just a toy. Like, this is how much money he's making from the race, even with such a little, you know, such little attendance. Like, the idea of being able to have access to more fans and possibly make more money is worth just this ridiculous amount of hassle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a hassle. That's a good way to characterize that, because that's how I'm in the, like, you know, do it or don't boat with that whole concept. It was like, why are we doing this cutesy wootsy little, we're gonna play down here and then we're gonna play up there and it'll be a whole, we'll work it out, it's fine. Like, go to Montreal or don't. What are you doing in Tampa? Like, come on. I know that there's very passionate Rays fans, and honestly the Rays have been a fun if obnoxious team to watch in the past couple of years, but yeah, I mean, you can't tell me that it's so popular down there that there's like, you know, if we're looking at this like a billionaire who wants to make money, how lucrative is Tampa of an opportunity, really? Like, it can't be that great to split it between months. Just move to Montreal. Just go. Just do it. Like, everybody wants to see that, even if it's just a novelty for some people. Like, just go. Come on.
I think they'll move somewhere. They can't possibly stay.
They can't.
They can't. There's they've had, I think, two different stadium sites that they have not been able to fully develop or, you know, get beyond the promised stage. They had one just over a year ago fall through in Ybor City, which is just across the bay. Because part of the problem with Tampa, with the Tropicana Field, is that it's, like, across the bay and really inconvenient for people who actually live in Tampa proper to get to. Yeah. It's really hard. So if we want to talk more about Tampa Bay, we can talk about them trading Tommy Pham, who's making a grand total of $8 million next year.
Well, see, I was going to ask, because I know we're running out of time on this compact episode of Continued Success, but I was going to ask, what is your favorite team acquisition thus far this season among any team in baseball?
It's absolutely the, quote, slapdick prospects that that the Rays got back while trading Tommy Pham, one of their most productive fielders, one of their productive players last year, who is very popular. Blake Snell was streaming on Twitch, which is a weird thing to say. Uh-huh. But he was not weird because it's bad, but it's weird because the baseball players that we grew up with did not do that. Could you imagine Chase Utley streaming on Twitch?
No. Chase Utley posted a picture of himself on Instagram, like having like some kind of cloned, like a picture where it was three of him in different poses. His persona has, you know, the way he's come alive in a way to like to decry the persona that we had given him of the like extremely intense silent man is bizarre, surreal enough. I can't imagine, Chase Utley streaming on Twitch.
Yes.
You know, as we were sitting here talking, by the way, Jeff Passan of ESPN has reported that Alex Avila and the Twins are in agreement over a 1 year for $0.25 million deal. So, you know, we talked earlier about how much quicker this market seems to be moving this offseason. Literally, while we're talking, there's a deal being made. But catchers are moving quick.
Yes.
Yasmani Grandal got a deal. Whoever the fill-in for him in Milwaukee is got a deal. Now Avila's going to Minnesota. I mean, my favorite. I really liked. I know we all really liked Mike Moustakas going to the Reds. Finally getting paid. But I'm a big fan of Jonathan Villar going to the Marlins, because the Orioles, first of all, just let him go for nothing.
Again,
like, it's like their best player.
Another case of now they're trying. That's one that's not about money. They're just trying to tank on purpose now. Like the Rays doing their trade. That's about money. And just to finish my story, as Blake Snell was streaming on Twitch last night, he heard about the Tommy Pham trade, smacked himself in the forehead, and said, "We traded Pham for what? Some slapdick prospect?" Oh, Blake Snell.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I forgot you were in the middle.
No. I just wanted to say that there is video of it out there.
That's a t-shirt now. I saw it this morning. I was like, I don't know what that is, but I love that t-shirt that says slapdick prospects.
Yep.
And I didn't know that's the story of that.
That is from Blake
amazing.
Snell, who recently, not too long ago, signed a long contract with those Rays. I feel like he might not have known what he was getting into.
We traded Pham for Renfro and some slapdick prospects.
Yep.
Wow, Blake Snell, my favorite baseball player.
Yes, I mean, he obviously picked up the honesty, but I mean, he was on Twitch and was not in a formal baseball setting. But I like to think that some of Tommy Pham's famous honesty, because he will say what's on his mind. That's one of the reasons why I love him so much. But I like to think that some of that has rubbed off on Blake Snell. What are the Rays going to do to him? Like, he can say whatever he wants. Most they could do is trade him. He's like, great. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to? The only worst team you could trade me to is the Marlins or the Mariners. So if you, neither of them are going to take my contract. So what are you going to do?
And I am all about the Marlins getting these quietly impactful players like that. I
mean, are you? Why?
Because it entertains me to see the first steps of a terrible baseball team's attempts to be more than terrible. I mean, we follow baseball, so anonymous is probably a strong word. But the Marlins have been filling out their roster with a lot of guys who you're not familiar with because they're not very good or they're from other team systems. And, you know, there hasn't been a lot of known entities on the Marlins. They had Martin Prado. He's retiring. So to acquire Villar and Jesus Aguilar, their whole, you know, right side of the infield, you know, both spots out of it are now different, are like recognizable players. And Villar is really good. Like, he instantly became the Marlins' best player. This is not a team that deserves a whole lot of like, hey, way to go. But I'm entertained by the Marlins because we gloss over them so much in our NL East discussions. So to see them get a player like that, to have to go from the Orioles to the Marlins, it's entertaining to me. I am entertained by it.
There's weirdly more hope, I think, with the Marlins, because they are, I mean, they divested of as many good and expensive players as they possibly could and are now, you know, the reason they did that is because they needed to pay back some of the debt that they had incurred as, you know, the ownership group coming in. You hope that that is, you know, soon to be less of a priority and they might actually staff up, because as much as I like to see them fail because it's easier for the Phillies, they lose to them all the time anyway. So I'd rather them lose to them when they're at least halfway competent rather than just like barely trying.
And I would rather see them win personally, but, you know, to each their own.
Yes, I would rather see them. I'm sorry. My assumption is that they're just going to lose. They lost to the Marlins an embarrassing number of times last year. So my assumption now is always they're just going to lose to the Marlins.
And that's the Phillies equivalent of there's always next year. I assume they're going to lose.
Actually,
every win is a pleasant surprise.
That if we're looking for differences in the fan bases, because we're very similar, I feel like that's it. The Mets are very much the fan bases. There's always next year, even though they know that next year is likely to be the same. The Phillies come at it from, well, we know they're going to lose. Where do we go from there?
It's just a matter of when. You know, Gene Mock had a great quote about, you know, hey, when you lose at the beginning of the season, it's a poor start. When you lose in the middle, it's a losing streak. And when you lose at the end, I'm blowing this. What is it? You know, just like a letdown, like a disappointment. It just gets characterized different. So maybe the Phillies will just lose at a different part of the season in 2020.
Yay!
And we can have a different narrative from the what the hell's the word? A burnout. I don't know. What is the word we always use to describe like a 1964-esque?
Collapse.
There we go. Thank you. God damn it. All right. This podcast is over. Thank you for listening to Continued Success. Liz has to go to the dentist. So we'll wrap things up here. Thanks for listening. As always, subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite Phillies podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hitting Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rozier, and The Dirty Inning with Dr. Trevor Strunk and myself. We've got a new episode of that coming up, probably Cole Hamilton, Zach Wheeler themed. As always, give us $5 and you get access to all kinds of bonus content on the Hitting Season Patreon. We got a conversation between me and Chris Jones that's very entertaining. We'll be doing those every couple of weeks, or you know, when something happens and Chris is available. John and Liz and I will be putting up all kinds of bonus content. That site's going to come alive and will be well worth your $5. So give us your money. Give it. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.
Bye.